Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White loves diversity in sport. So this is his thing. He loves all this sort of stuff, and he loves a Wednesday jam-packed with this sort of activity. Good morning to you, Whitey.
What sort of diversity?
What do you mean?
Lots of different sports.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
You don't like any other types of diversity? Just sport diversity?
Just like sport. Just like sport.
Don't like?
Not politics in sport. You know that.
Where'd that come from?
Sometimes when people say diversity, you know what I mean. We're not going to get ourselves in trouble. It's too early in the morning.
Well, I'm not getting myself in trouble.
A little bit too much Carlton on the show. We've got an AFLW coach. We've got David Mackay, wing position on the members' side. And we've also got Mark Murphy.
Yes.
Jeez.
Yes. Well, we couldn't find anyone else from Essendon to talk to. We've drained the swamp, so to speak, at Essendon. There's nothing left. So we had to go somewhere else.
That's not true.
We had to go somewhere else, and it was just the Blues that put up their hand to be a part of it. Looking forward to chatting to Swan a little bit later on, because my first memories of Swan Mackay weren't as a player. It was David Mackay around the grounds.
Yes.
Swan Mackay at the park. That sort of stuff. Around the ground stuff for Swan Mackay. That's when I first learned of Swan Mackay.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to finding out a bit about those days with Swan. Of course, there's plenty to talk about from his playing days.
It's almost a legend series type of
activity. Well, it is. It's almost a legend series. Well, he's becoming a legend of the Blues, so it is a legend series, sort of effectively. But I'm looking forward to catching up with him, let alone the other guests we have on the program. Mm. Speaking of the radio, there's been a real development in my life
right.
in the last 4 days.
Right.
And we've talked about this a lot on the program, but I've never really found myself engaging in it to any great degree. But my world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I've found the digital radio in the car. Yeah, the digital radio.
What do you mean you found it?
Well, I know where the button is now.
You didn't know you had it?
Well, I didn't. I wasn't quite aware that I had it. and now I've got it. And my world's changed. There is so many opportunities to just enjoy the magic of music and so many different genres that my world has changed. My driving experience has never been the same. Has never been like this. And I'm a happier man for it.
So you had a digital radio in your car and you didn't even know?
Well, I didn't know how to work it. Didn't really know. And because I'm a traditional sort of fellow, as you quite know. And it's easy just to press the FM buttons and the AM buttons when I need to. But I wasn't quite aware how to work the DAB Plus thing.
Mm-hmm.
And really didn't have the inclination to press any buttons to try and work it out. So I just sort of, it was just there apparently. I mean, I never found it. But I found myself flicking the other day, and my goodness.
Well,
is it a very good, very good thing?
Well, the autumn ticket's just going to be front and center on a Saturday afternoon now.
Well, no doubt. Well, I used to listen through the app. See, I would listen, plug the app in into the car, get it through the Bluetooth. So I didn't bother with the digital radio situation. And if you haven't downloaded the app, just by the way, you need to do that, RSN 927. It's very, very good, and you get access to all the cool stuff. So I didn't do that. I just pressed the app button on my phone and plugged it through. But now, the choices, Adam. The choices.
The world's your oyster.
Oh, my goodness. Chemist Warehouse Remix is a very good channel.
It beats Coles Radio?
It does beat Coles Radio, because I've heard about Coles Radio, and I did a bit of flicking, and I found that the other day. But I found CW Remix, and I didn't know what it was, but I pressed the button, and it became these great tunes, these just cruise along in your car sort of tunes, and it turns out it was Chemist Warehouse Remix. So whoever's in charge of the CW Remix channel, well done, is what I say to you. Urban Hits is quite solid too. Buddha Radio.
Gary Hocking's got his own radio
Gary
station.
Gary Hocking has his own station.
It's sponsored by Whiskers.
Yes, it is. It's brilliant. It's been very, very good. And I can't believe it's taken me this long to work it out. And I've missed a couple of years of activities, what I've missed. In the old car. Well, not the old car, the new car.
Wow, there you go.
So there you go. So I thought I'd get that across. If you have got a radio, did your radio in your car, and you haven't ever surfed because it's been all too hard like me, do yourself a favour, as Molly might say, and get into it.
Very good.
Because it's a nice thing. It's a very, very good thing.
Well, you'll have to explain to me later how you didn't know you actually had a digital radio in your car. That doesn't make much sense, but anyway.
No, because there's a touchscreen thingy and there's all these little...
Is this in your black one or your white one?
No, the black one's gone.
Oh, what? Is it?
The little white one is now the black one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right.
There's been a
development.
Well, yes, there's been a development. Well, the lease popped up, so we had to get a new one.
Right. So you've gone... Right, okay, okay. Well, there is a lot to discuss over breakfast.
Digital radio. Anyway, digital radio, if you have not into it, and you have it, get into it, because it's pretty cool.
Now, a very interesting thing happened yesterday. I'm going to put the first topic on the table, because I think for the first time, the football season got real. And
what happened?
Well, someone set a marker on a club, and it actually is Carlton.
Wasn't David King saying the Hawks going to be wooden spooners, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was Robert Walls saying that David Teague needs to get Carlton to the finals. And I think it's the first time that we've seen a situation where things got real. There's a marker being put out there, and this is why, you know, AFL seasons are so intense and create so many interesting talking points and all that sort of thing. I think for the first time this season, we start to see, okay, things are getting serious. We're getting the former legend come out there and sort of, I guess, put the pressure on a team that all of a sudden that there is a marker set. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
So where did Wolsey say this?
It's in The Age.
Exclusively?
He's talking about David Teague and, you know, the time is now for Carlton to make the finals. And I think... You know, of all the clubs in the competition this year, they are almost the most interesting club. And because I don't have them... No, I don't have them in the eight, but I think there is expectation that they will push for the eight. They were very close to it last year. But I think that the time has come from a lot of people to think, the Blues, they've got to make the finals. They've been missing for a long time. Obviously, Essendon hasn't won a final for 468 years. but I think from a Carlton perspective, the expectation is as high as it has been in a very long time to make the finals. So that with that comes some pressure.
So you think they're the most interesting club in the competition?
Yeah, and I'm comfortable talking about this because we are in March and we've got the pre-season competition officially starting tomorrow. So I think we can talk about these sorts of things. I think Carlton is the most interesting team of all teams going into this year.
Right, I'm throwing that out the early door. 0416905052. Who is, if you want to give us why, the most interesting team coming into season 2021? Whitey's got the Blues on the back of Wolsey's claims that they should be making finals and putting a bit of heat on David Teague. Who's in his what?
Third year?
Second full year, was it?
Yes.
So he took over midway through 2019, coached a COVID year, and then
I think it's harsh. I, to be honest, I don't think that David Teague should be under a lot of pressure this year. But Carlton as a football club, at what point does the expectation rise that the list is there, they should be making finals? I think so. That's a team coming up,
yep.
And I think the team potentially coming down that will hold the most interest is Collingwood. So to me, the traditional rivals, Carlton and Collingwood, they are the two teams for me that are the most intriguing of 2020, where the storylines 2021, the storylines around them are going to be really, really interesting, because Collingwood might stay at the top, sort of in that top six, but they might crash. Carlton might get into the finals, but they also might necessarily crash, but they still might be, say, a bottom six team. I think there is massive differences between what's possible, both positive and negative, with those two sides.
I've just flicked open to the AFL website just to get a visual of all the teams, all the 18 teams, just to trigger my memory of all these things. Going through that, if you're a Victorian football fan, there's a lot to digest this year. You've got Carlton, you've got Collingwood, you've got Essendon, You've got Hawthorn. Who knows what they're going to do? Kings putting them on the bottom. The D's are under a fair bit of pressure. You would think Simon Goodwin needs
them. Yeah, that would be my third team. Yep.
The Kangas with a new coach, they are expecting to rise. They've obviously got some young talent that they would expect to perform. Richmond are very good. We don't need to worry about them too much. The Saints, where do the Saints go from here? And the Doggies with this star-studded midfield. What do they do?
And then Geelong put all the eggs in the one basket. They get the star recruits and the pressure's on them to win a premiership before it's too late with the list demographic they've got.
So it's a bit to digest for Victorian footy fans this year.
So the reason I throw that out there is that I reckon last year there was so much focus on just getting the season out there. You know, and it was on Hub Life and it was almost like the battle of survival. You know, shortened quarters, the footy frenzy, all these sorts of things. Whereas I think this year, hopefully, fingers crossed, it goes back to more a traditional narrative of the season where there is the intensity of expectation on clubs and on star players and coaches. We go back to a normal sort of season. And I think that because we kind of didn't have it last year, this year I think the intensity levels will be on steroids. On clubs and on, because there's going to be this extra expectation. You know, fans can go to the games again, which they didn't get to do last year, really, particularly here in Victoria. There's no excuses. We're back to sort of normal footy, normal length games, all that sort of thing. That I think there'll be a heightened emotion around everything. I feel around town that people cannot wait for the footy to start. It's sort of all of a sudden it's here. But I think people are really looking forward to going again, back to a traditional sort of weekend activity as opposed to it being on all the time. I think the expectation levels are really high.
It's fever pitch in the AFLW at the moment on the back of that sort of stuff. They're loving the contest. It's good business. Off the SMS, wait till you find colour television half. That's going to be awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much. What's a digital button look like? Well, it looks like a radio in my car. A little radio with DAB written on it. That's what it looks like. Somebody wants to know. I don't know what it looks like in your car. Essendon, and in particular, Truck Rutten, you know, in terms of pressure. Will he be able to deal with the supporters' expectations?
Well, what are the supporters' expectations?
Well, seemingly from that SMS, the supporters' expectations are quite high.
Yeah, see, I would say that for the first time in quite some time, the Essendon supporters, they don't have high expectations.
According to that SMS, they do. How can you say Carlton made the eight... Carlton nearly made the eight last year. They finished 11th, 10 points out of the eight with a percentage of 94.3.
Because with about 4 weeks to go, they were still in the premiership hunt, which is the top eight hunt, which hadn't necessarily been the case much in recent years.
Gold Coast for me, time to step up. And I think they can and will, says Ronnie in Tatura. Good morning, Ron. Now, the whole Matt Rowe conversation with Gold Coast will be interesting to see how much cheering is going on for Matt Rowell and what he can do for the Gold Coast Suns, because there was enormous pressure on that kid. Talk about pressure on coaches or clubs. That kid is carrying the whole football, Northern Queensland football community on his shoulders, basically. We know Brisbane are very good and they're doing their thing, but he's under enormous pressure to be this megastar in game number 4 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, he had expectation because of what he did in his first 3 rounds, but then the expectation grew even more significantly when he wasn't playing. It's like sort of not out of sight, out of mind, because we kept talking about him, but he became a better player when he wasn't playing.
It's because he had a notebook. He had a notebook and a high pant. That's the real key to the Matty Rowe situation. So hopefully we see him become a star, but I don't want to burden that young man with too much responsibility for his football club at the tender age of 19. I think we give him a chance to breathe and learn his craft, I reckon. I do want to mention this too before we can continue this discussion after the break with Shani too. But Michael Gudinski, the passing of Michael Gudinski yesterday was clearly a shock for a lot of Melburnians and a lot of music lovers across the nation as well. He was certainly a pioneer and one of the hardest working men in the business and changed the lives of thousands of people in the music industry. But he was also a great lover of sport. We know his love for the Saints. In the AFL, but also of racing. So he's had a long association with racing and footy. They're two of our loves here, particularly on the Breakfast Club. So that was a real shock yesterday. We send our condolences to the Gadinski family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a giant, not only in the music world, but he's just a giant in Melbourne. And you'd often see him in the mounting yard on Melbourne Cup Day because he had a Melbourne Cup runner.
He won a couple, didn't he?
He did. He did. So he was part of sort of that Lloyd Williams, sort of Nick Williams group. I mean, it was a huge shock when we saw that this morning. Sort of think he's the sort of character that while he lived life very much to the fullest, that he was going to be around forever.
Three Melbourne Cups he won with El Mandin, Rekindling and Twilight Payment.
Yeah, it was just recently.
Just last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from a racing perspective, one of the key figures in the game, and certainly from, as you say, a Melbourne perspective. I mean, we talk about like icons of Melbourne. There's not too many bigger than Michael Gadinski. So, a very sad news yesterday for the passing of Michael at the age of 68. We are in the position to get ready for the world-famous five-question Lardo's Steakhouse Quiz.
And so, what does the winner win?
Well, the winner wins a voucher, lunch or dinner for two, valued at $210 of Lardo's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. Bridge Road in Richmond, an icon of Australian, let alone Victorian dining.
Failed to mention yesterday that John Burgess does come in every morning and just makes a presence. We haven't got government supervisors. They are unavailable, but it's good to see John didn't have much going on, that he would actually join us and be part of... Just be around. And John, obviously, yeah, we should say good morning. How are you?
Peter, Valerie and Roger.
What?
Your destiny is in their hands.
We don't have government supervisors. We just said,
Joe.
We don't have government supervisors.
He's such
just
a creature.
To be asked to have a crack at participating was amazing to me. So, yeah, I'm as I said, truly, truly chuffed.
Right, good. Excellent.
He's such a creature of habit. He just always goes to the government supervisors.
Now, we're going to sort of mix things up a little bit. Still five questions, but one of the questions is going to be a mystery voice.
Oh!
You have to identify.
This is
really going to new levels. So it's almost back to 1999, 2000, Total Recall type areas on Sport 927 as it was. So that will be part of the quiz. So that's very exciting.
Who was the bloke that used to tell the gags from the pool store?
What?
The billiards shop, the billiards place. Who was the bloke that used to do that?
On
927, yeah. Someone will know.
Stefan from Allcox.
Stefan from Allcox. Stefan from Allcox. There you go. There you go. Fantastic stuff. Sorry, I digress.
This is going to be. I thought you were talking about Marshall Dobson.
Oh, well, here's the other one. Did he tell a gag in the mornings?
Yeah, he had told a gag, and he also had. He used to do some prank calls.
That's right, Marshall.
And he used to come up with the famous line, the more you bet, the more you win.
That's right, he did too.
Not sure that'd go down so well these days.
I would think the government supervisors might have something to say about that.
Anyway, let's get on to it. Michael from Hawthorne, good morning.
How are you going?
Thanks for patiently waiting. Are you ready?
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
Five questions?
Five questions. One of those will be a mystery voice question. And Michael has obviously called through on 1-300-652-927. Michael, question one for you is, which EPL team currently sits 12 points clear of anyone else?
Man City.
Correct. Well done. Good start. Question two.
Didn't sound too confident there, man.
This is an interesting question, this one.
We'll be the judge of that.
Because of just what's been going on at the moment. Who is the current coach of the Brisbane Heat in the BBL who is yet to be offered a new contract?
Is it Buff Lehman?
Nice work, Michael.
Good. Do you find that interesting?
Considering they won two finals and he's under the pump, maybe it's a salary cap issue. Maybe he's getting too much cash and they've got no cash left. But outside of that, I think it's very interesting. Considering the Renegades. From the Renegades, I'm straight on the phone. Straight on the phone, get him in.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because they don't have a coach.
They don't have a coach.
No.
And I would like a good one.
That's a good point. Very good point. Okay, Michael, question three. Who defeated Nick Kyrgios in the third round of the Australian Open in five sets only a couple of weeks ago?
Dominic Thiem.
Very good, Michael.
Nice work,
very
Michael.
Good
this
answer
is a really
confidence.
Strong. We've never had someone run the board here.
Michael, the key here is that you are going to make radio history here and you are going to be the first participant of the Mystery
no
Voice.
Pressure.
Okay, listen very carefully. This is the Mystery Voice.
Left school and played tennis for what? Played interstate for New South Wales under 19.
Hang on.
Then got into hang on, John.
Bowling, John, radio, John, John, shut up. That's not the mystery voice.
He just jumped in.
That's the mystery voice. That's just rude. You won't be back tomorrow.
John!
Can't help it. Yeah, he played tennis.
I wasn't aware of his tennis career. I knew the 10-pin bowling. I wasn't aware
Michael, this is the mystery voice.
To be honest, progression's just been really good.
The background freeway noise is unhelpful. Let's play a longer. Can we get a longer version of that?
Too well, is it?
No, it's going all right. It's going all right. Let's have another listen.
To be honest, progression's just been really good. It's really been sort of the last 2 weeks. It's been a solid ramp. Before that, sort of a lot of
grass. Right, that's enough. Where did he do that from?
Well, the side of the highway.
Westgate Bridge.
The side of the
highway. All right, who is it? Michael?
Cool. I'd have to say... I'll go John Burgess. I know it's not...
well done, Michael. Bad luck. But well like the answer. Well Josh from Greensburg. Good morning, Josh.
Morning, lads.
Okay. Do you want to hear it one more time?
Yes, please.
Okay.
To be honest, progression's just been really good.
That's all you're getting.
Yeah. Oh. Can I have a hint?
No.
Yes, you absolutely you can. A very, 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 very well-known AFL footballer.
Very well-known. Can I get a team?
No.
Not yet.
Something.
Not yet.
Oh, jeez.
But I'll let you hear it one more time.
Thank you.
To be honest, progression's just been really good.
Yeah. Joey Danaher.
Not Joe Danaher. Let's go to... We'll go to Cameron from Coburg. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Who is it?
Yeah, I have no idea. I struggle. I think you have to get the order a little bit better, boys. So, sorry.
I actually don't disagree with that.
No, this is
a very strange choice.
It's almost like he's down the highway.
That's right. It does almost sound like he's down the highway. Maybe he stopped in... Maybe it was outside the front of the Cryo Roadhouse. Just having something to eat. Who knows? Gary from Melton. Good morning, Gary. You there, Gary? No, Gary's gone. I wonder whether Scott from Geelong might know. Scott, good morning.
How are you, lads?
Good, Scotty.
We're going well.
Sort of.
We'll hear it one more time.
Right.
To be honest, progression's just been really good.
We've got to get... Who put this together? Is this what happens? Frank, did you do this? did you cut this audio?
Well, without the hints, I was no hope, but it's probably Paddy Dangerfield.
Oh, correct.
Correct.
Far too much John Burgess this morning, but anyway.
No. Now, Frank, if you're going to do the breakfast bite and cut corners on audio for the world-famous Vlado Steakhouse quiz, it's a sackable offence. Goodness
anyway,
me.
It was almost like the voice was sort of, you know, made harder than it needed to be.
It's basically in pit lane at the bloody Albert Park Grand Prix. Couldn't hear anything.
All right.
Worst audio ever.
Which former golf great made her return to professional golf last week for the first time since 2008?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
Go back. Take your mind.
I know what I want to say, but...
Take your mind back.
I got Annika Sorenstam.
Very good,
well
Scott.
Done.
Well played. Well played. Show composure. I don't know what you wanted to say, but you got the right answer. Well done. Congratulations. What has he won?
Scotty, you are a champion this morning on the Vlado Steakhouse World Famous 5-Question Quiz. We're giving you a lunch or dinner for two, valued at $210 at Vlado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. And that is excellent work from you. Congratulations. And to be back tomorrow, the World Famous, with clear audio, if we ever do a voice again, but it's not a good...
We give trainers yellow cards. We'll be giving producers yellow cards.
Well, he's our man who is taking the breakfast bite by storm in the last couple of days. He's getting very much ahead of himself.
Yep.
He's blaming Steve-O because he recorded the interview for Channel 7.
Yeah,
no. Just ripped it off Channel 7, he did. Worst audio ever. Hey, we haven't touched base with Steve-O for a while. He must be real. Like, you're talking on March 3, you're very excited about the world of footy. You're talking about teams under pressure, coaches under pressure. Can you imagine Steve-O at the moment?
Oh, he'd be mapping out. he'd be mapping out what medical clinic, scanning clinic he'd be at. He'd be starting to sort of just, you know, do that.
I thought there was more to that. You just stopped. Let's get to Shani Norder. You might know her as Shani Light. She's been married in the off-season. She's doing great things, and she's dominating for the Magpies as well in the AFLW. 5-0. They are unbelievable. They're mighty girls in the black and white. And she's got the new book out, No Apologies, which I am very, very keen to read, but I don't have a copy of. Shani, can you fix that for me? Good morning.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, you stingy. It's still before 7. Can I say prick? But
you can say prick. Absolutely can.
Absolutely. Yeah, I might be able to fix something up for you.
Yeah, good. Yeah, nice work. And by the way, we appreciate you getting up before 7, but I've got a feeling that you're a sort of a morning sort of gal.
Oh, my God. I definitely am not, but I'm already at work. So
what?
Since, obviously, you know, spending some lovely time with you guys over the last couple of years, I now work at Methodist Ladies College in Kew. And so I take training from 7 till 8, so I'm in here at 6:30 every morning. So I am officially a morning person.
So hang on. They have footy training every morning, did you say?
No, netball. So oh. I'm the head of netball here at MLC.
Every morning they train?
Well, yeah, so I take grade 5, oh, sorry, I should say year 5 through to year 12. We've got 29 teams, 15 coaches, and over 300 girls.
Wowzers.
Yeah, I keep myself busy.
That's awesome. So how are you enjoying that, the early starts when you've got late night training and then games on the weekend? How are you coping with all that?
Yeah, look, I'm struggling. I'm cooked, to be honest with you. But I'm at a stage of my life where work is really important, obviously for transitioning outside of footy, or outside of just sport in general. So I think the sacrifices, funnily enough, the sacrifices you make at the start of your career because you need to work and play, you then also need to make at the end of your career because you need to work and play because, you know, you don't want to finish up whenever it is and then not have anything to go to. And I was really lucky to get this job last year during COVID when everyone else was, you know, struggling. I actually landed myself a job and, you know, it's great. It's part-time. So although I kind of work from 6:30 to 12, I've got a little bit of time before getting to training. But yeah, it's a very long day.
Do you have, Shani, a greater appreciation or maybe even a deeper love for netball, having stepped away from it for a while and then coming back to it? Do you see it differently or is it sort of just click back to the way it used to be?
No, it's so different. And I think, I don't know if I've spoken to you guys about it before, but, you know, when I retired from the top level netball, I really fell in love with community netball again and what it's all about and the fun and the love and the friendships. And still those that, you know, that do want to make it and you can help them, you know, on the path to their career, you know, to whatever they want to achieve. But then also, you know, we've just got great participation, like a lot of girls drop out of sport between the ages of 15 and 17, and we've got 60 girls that just go down and play on a Saturday, which I just think's absolutely phenomenal. And you're right, that side of it, I am extremely passionate about it. So for me, I'm loving getting back to this community grassroots level, and that's what makes me happy about netball.
All right, the book, I do like the name. It's perfect, I think, for you. No Apologies.
Thank you. I nailed it.
What's the feedback been from it so far?
Pretty fresh, to be honest. Like, I don't know if a lot of people have read it yet. The ones that have are pretty close to me, and they've really enjoyed the story. And, you know, even a lot of close friends and family don't know a lot of stuff that is in there because, you know, you don't talk about the hard times, the dark times. If you're chatting to people, you just want to chat about the good stuff. You know, one of my best mates to this day that I was in school with, she was like, "Shams, I just didn't understand how much you were doing when you were at school." And you know, it's been a really good understanding. I haven't had any negative feedback, not saying that won't come. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people think. But also, you know, for me, it's just my story and I'm just putting it out there. And I'm hoping that a few can learn from it, whether it being in the sporting industry, whether it's people outside of that are just, you know, stuck and want to get themselves out of something that they're somewhere they don't want to be anymore. So, yeah, but all so far so good at the moment.
So you have been on a bit of a journey of self-discovery since you left netball, Shani, seemingly, and you've had your challenges, as you talked about, from a mental health perspective, getting yourself back on track and finding your lovers again, as you just talked about then. Was there always an inclination that you wanted to put it down on paper, or was it just something that popped up?
Oh, always. I love writing. I used to do creative writing in school. I've always done journals. I've always, like, written my, like, speeches and poems, some friends' weddings and stuff like that. And so when I, it's actually really hard to get a book deal as a female athlete because female athletes' books, history says that they don't sell because the wives buy the books for their husbands for Father's Day, Christmas, whatever it is. So it was always a risk. It was really hard getting a publisher to pick me up. So it was really grateful to Affirm Press. But I already had 35,000 words of journaling before I'd even gone to the publisher. So, you know, they knew that I was committed to writing a good story. They obviously know that I'm a bit of a character. And so the fact that they backed me in was awesome. But, yeah, so it's a 77,000-word book, and so I pretty much already had half of it done before I even went to the publisher.
You mentioned Peter Siddle. You talk about new combinations. There's a new combination for him in the world of long-form domestic cricket in the Sheffield Shield. He's wearing the wrong colours, as far as we're concerned, for Tasmania, taking on Victoria this Friday at the MCG. He's back against his old boys. I wonder how he's feeling about that. Sids, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
You're wearing the wrong colours.
No, I just enjoyed wearing the baggy green of Australia, so I just wanted to continue wearing it.
Oh, okay, righto, okay.
That was the choice.
I'll wear that a little bit. I'll wear that. How are you feeling in the build-up to Friday's encounter?
Yeah, not too bad. I haven't really thought too much about it as yet, but no, just looking forward to getting back out there. Obviously missed the last game, getting my thumb checked and giving that little bit longer to rest and heal and but yeah, just feeling excited to get back out there and play.
So was that from the caught and bowled chance in the Big Bash, that thumb?
Yeah, so yeah, the little Fraser McGurk hit one too hard back at me and she'd probably just let it go. I'm getting a bit old, the fragile bone. So disappointing, but just wanted to get back out and play now. Missed it last week.
Did you do more damage because you stayed out there? I remember there was the high one that you had to sort of run back with a flight to try and catch late in that game. Did that make it worse?
I don't know. I think possibly, but yeah, I guess it was probably just more the games that I played after that at the back end of the Big Bash that I copped a few knocks at different stages throughout, so probably didn't give it the best chance to heal, but in Melbourne the other week and saw the surge and everything, they were happy with how it's progressing, so... might as well just get back out there and continue to play.
So you said you haven't really thought too much about playing against Victoria. We'll get you thinking about it now.
That's our job.
What's it going to be like, do you think? I mean, you've obviously bowled at the MCG for so many years, and now you're going to be wearing different colours against players that you know very well. What do you think it's going to be like?
I think that it's going to be just funny. I think, yeah, just running in and you sort of got me thinking about running in and bowling for Maddo and Harry up front. I think it'll be a little bit just more weird, I think. It'll feel a little bit like a training session, probably to start with. But, it's going to be different. Obviously, walking out of a different change room at the MCG, that's probably going to be the weirdest thing. And if I was... going to play them somewhere. I guess the first game against them at the MCG is going to be quite special. So, looking forward to that. And we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I think there's probably going to be plenty of funny moments running into the boys and bowling to them out in the middle of the MCG.
Peter, you've obviously got a huge amount of experience. There's a lot of different athletes that you're working with in Tassie. What's your role, though? Is it just purely, do you see it just as purely what you can bring on the field? Or is there a broader kind of look for you at the moment about what else you can give to the rest of the group?
Yeah, I think a little bit, obviously, the main part of it is, yeah, the playing side for me, playing and performing and helping the boys on the field. But... sort of from a development point and looking towards the future for me and after obviously cricket is, yeah, the coaching sort of aspect. So I think a little bit of, yeah, obviously the playing is the main part, but yeah, there is a lot of work at training and with all the young guys down here, we've got a nice young squad, so work alongside them, trying to help them and mentor them a little bit while still playing, but it's given me a chance to sort of develop my coaching skills and work with some great coaches that we've got down here.
Is that something you enjoy?
It is. I do. I like seeing the young guys, you know, develop and then get out there and get their chance and perform. I think it's pretty exciting to see and play alongside these young guys when they do get their chance. So hopefully, yeah, to be able to help develop some of these guys down here. And I've said it all along since I did sign down here that ideally I'd like one of these young kids to take my spot and force me into retirement. I think that's probably the great end goal. I guess most people probably wouldn't think like that, but for me, yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see one of these young guys take my spot and force me into retirement. And I think it means I've done a half decent job at, you know, helping develop these kids.
Hey, Jake Lever's come a long way too, as we digress and move on to the world of Australian rules football. Last night announced he was re-signing with the club for a further 3 seasons, if you don't mind, to the end of 2024. That's always a nice thing to have in the back pocket. Jake, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure having you on. Nice to have you a part of our world today, particularly with the season just around the corner. Another 3 years, ever an issue, or is it just a matter of time before you can lock yourself in?
Oh, yeah, no, I think that, I was always pretty confident, pretty happy with where I'm at Melbourne Footy Club. And I think that, over the time, I got here in 2018, obviously didn't play when the boys played in the final series, and I've been disappointed in the last 2 years that we've had as a club. But over those past 2 years, I think we've had some really good learnings, and I've been a part of that. And now I think that as a group, we're ready to take that next step, and I'm really excited about what we can produce. As you said, not only those 3 seasons that I signed, but I've still got one this year, so basically 4 seasons. I'm just super excited to see what this group can produce.
Well, it's great news for the D's fans to lock in for that period of time. The adjustment from coming across from the Crows, was it harder than you thought it might be, considering the injuries that you faced in 2018 and 19? That when you're a recruit, you always want to put your hand up and be a player that's available more often than not and make yourself known to the players, let alone the supporters. And you weren't able to do that through no fault of your own. Was it more challenging than you thought?
Oh, I think definitely. I think when I first got over to my own account, I wasn't playing the best footy in the first 3 or 4 rounds in 2018. And I sort of felt like I got myself going and as you said, got injured. And it was a pretty difficult 12 months because, as you said, when you're recruited to the club and you want to be successful at that club and bring success, it's really hard to do that while you're in rehab. And the end of 2019... things weren't going great as a club, and I was sort of just battling through trying to get a little bit of match fitness once I got back, and I think I might have played the last 10 games, but really struggled to find my feet. And then last year, I thought that I found my feet really well, especially early on the season, and then especially when we went to the Hub, I thought that I played some consistent footy, but a little bit like the club last year, we were probably too inconsistent. So I think that that's where I sat as well, and I'm just super excited. Yeah, as you said, it's really hard to sort of impact the club when you're in rehab, but I felt like, I feel like that's really behind me now, and I'm looking forward to putting it out on the field.
Jake, one of the things that stood out for me, I was just having a look at some of your stats yesterday, is that you are incredibly efficient when you get the ball in hand. 82% efficiency in 2020, which is very, very high in my mind. Is that something that you are proud of, you work really hard at, or is it just something that comes naturally for you?
I think that, for me, the efficiency is something that, maybe early on in my career, I'd be taking kicks that in my skill set probably weren't, I wasn't quite up to it. And I think just over time, you really learn that, there's guys like in our side, you've got Christian Salem, you've got probably, Michael Hibbert, Stephen May, these type of guys that can really take that aggressive kick, and, their percentages might be 65%, but when they hit those kicks, it turns up down the other end for a goal. And I think for me, I've just learnt to really use my skill set, and it's probably not as big as some of those guys, but I think for me it's about playing basic football, and the efficiency thing probably just comes off the back of that.
It seems that yourself and Stephen May coming to the footy club, it was almost like Melbourne were going to rebuild from the back, and now you've sort of played a fair bit of footy together. You mentioned Salem and Hibbert and then yourself and May. It's looking a good settled back six. Do you think it's going to be the cornerstone to your success this year?
Oh, look, I think that us as a
defensive group. We think we have the capabilities to be one of the best defensive groups in the competition. And, you know, you mentioned guys like that, but we've also got, you know, Neville Jetta's come back to pre-season. He's sort of, I wouldn't say he's got a chip on his shoulder, but he knew that he didn't have the year that he wanted to last year and is really out to prove himself. And then we've got Jaden Hunt now that's come back, so who every time I give him the ball, it's like no one can catch him at the minute. So I think that, and even you talk about young guys as well, Trent Rivers. We just drafted a kid, Jake Bowie, who is a little redheaded pocket rocket. He's just phenomenal with the ball in hand and he's super competitive. So we're just excited what we've got down there. And as you said, I think we've got the capabilities to be one of the best defensive groups in the comp. And if that means that is the cornerstone of our success, then that so be it. But for us, we just want to be the best that we can be.
Frank Panese, their season kicks off around the corner as well. Thursday week, in fact, against the Rabbitohs. The season kicks off for them. The premiership defence starts, and the GM of footy has been good enough to join us. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Huff.
In the number 9 jersey, Frank, next Thursday night, who will be wearing it?
It'll be Brandon Smith, Huff. That's a definite because it was either Harry Grant or he's come back to us after a year's loan, a very successful loan at the Tigers, or Brandon Smith. But unfortunately, Harry injured himself in our trial last week up at Albury, so he's going to be out for 3 weeks, and so Brandon will be the number 9 next week.
So it will be a Smith, so you don't have to change the name, but it won't be Cameron. Are we confirmed that Cameron won't play?
Nothing's impossible, Huff, but I doubt it very much that Cameron will be running. As good as he is, but I don't think he's done one pre-season training, so even the great Cameron Smith couldn't just turn out with a week's training and play next week. But no, it won't be Cameron, unfortunately.
Harry Grant, I do want to talk about, and Brandon gets the chat as well, but is there any chance that this has been anywhere near unsettling for the squad, the whole Cameron Smith, now the Craig Bellamy and now the Dave Donaghy saga? I mean, there's a bit happening in your world, Frank.
No, it is, and obviously the outside noise is always out there, and it always has been with our club for whatever reasons over the years. But I think one thing Craig does really well here at the Storm is inside the place. He just doesn't let that get affected. We communicate with the players a lot when things like this are on, but absolutely no distraction whatsoever on any of those three matters that have, you know, created a lot of media speculation outside our four walls.
Frank, the Cam Smith situation certainly has created some discussion. Obviously, we're still talking about it now. How does it happen that we still don't 100% know with certainty? Is Cam, what's going through his mind at the moment? Is he still really wanting to keep things open? Does he still really not know exactly what's next for him?
Yeah, surely, definitely. That's a fact. I mean, people think he's playing media games. Couldn't be further from the truth. He had a fantastic season last year at 37 years of age in terms of A, enjoying it, but B, he, you know, played at a high level, and you know, he was in the top couple of the competition. Had he not been injured, he was a chance of winning the Dally M last year. So for him just to stop playing is a big decision, and I think what's going through his head that he wants to be totally sure the decision he makes. He does want to make one in the pre-season and then regret it. Either way, whether he decides to play on or he decides to retire and then says, you know what, I could have played. You know, just because the season's starting, if he decides to play again, he might play in a couple of weeks' time or a couple of months' time, who knows, but he might just retire. And, from our point of view, you know, all along, we've planned not to have Cameron. That was the mindset we took from the first day we got back to pre-season. And if anything changes, it'd be a bonus. So I think that's the reason it hasn't affected us whatsoever.
So the planning obviously has been there to have a life without Cam Smith. What does that look like? How does that change your approach on field? What are the shifts there? But I'm also interested in the off-field perspective too, and whether that will be a significant change to the way things are done, or will it just trying to be kind of continuing on the process that it would have been whether Cameron was there?
A bit of both. I know that's a funny answer, but you know, we've got to try to keep the processes that, you know, made us successful for a number of years. But having said that, it's very difficult to replace a Cameron Smith in lots of areas. One is a leadership role. Yeah. I mean, he's been a captain here for 15, 16 years of his 19 years. So, you know, we've put in two captains in Dale Finucane and Jesse Bromwich. We think that's the best way forward. They both complement each other. So we think that we've really worked a lot on our leadership group and our leaders. So really share the responsibility. when you've got such a dominant leader like Cameron for such a long period of time, I think it's important we spread that workload. And the other big area we've spent a lot of time is we've had to find a new goal kicker because Cameron's been our goal kicker for the last 17 years. So, you know, Ryan Pappenhausen's been doing some work with a fellow named Peter Breen, who's a Kiwi based here in Melbourne and really working on his kicking. So, and then the way we play, you know, Harry and Brandon play completely different to Cameron. So we've had to adjust our attack slightly in the middle of the field to accommodate the new dummy halves.
So the wing position on the member stand side. Oh, just a link goal! You beauty!
That moment doesn't happen without the great Swan Mackay. David Mackay's been made a legend of the Carlton Football Club, and that's a nice little moment, I'm sure, but I reckon the four flags throughout a magnificent career in the Navy Blue are more satisfying than all of that put together. And the great man himself joins us this morning on The Breakfast Club after the announcement. He is a legend of Carlton, officially. Swan, good morning.
Morning, Half. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. That's a nice little thing to have placed upon your legend status. How'd you feel when the club came knocking?
Well, I was absolutely chuffed. I was it was unexpected, and to be included in such a group of magnificent Carlton champions is quite humbling because I played with a lot of them, and I actually knew how good they were, and and I watched a few of them, and I knew how much better they were. So to be included in that group was you know, was quite special and a highlight in my football career and probably certainly my life.
Now, well, they got to play with you and understand how good you were too. I mean, in your second year, Swan, you were best on ground in the grand final. I know it was a good team to be a part of, but you made your name pretty quickly. Did you think you would when you first started?
No, I think like most players, you'd be happy to play one game, and then when you play one, you'd be happy to play 50 and then 100. But you know, I was lucky. I lasted a lot longer than I certainly expected, and I came down from the bush.
Oh, I know. I must admit, I didn't know where you came from until I read the release the other day. Newland, which, according to the 2016 census, Swan, there was only 128 people 5 years ago. I can imagine that was a few less back in your teenage years.
Might have been a few more.
Oh, a few more, you reckon?
Yeah, but it was just a small farming hamlet between Ballarat and Daylesford. So I went to school in Daylesford. I played a few four games with Daylesford as well in the Ballarat League then, but played most of my early footy with Newland.
Well, one of the games I wanted to talk to you about is that 1970 Premiership win, the grand final. You were down for most of the game, 17 points at three-quarter time. How much do you remember of that final quarter and the comeback? In fact, you went down by even more than that in the last quarter before you did make that comeback. What was the feeling and the sense within the group when you were down that whole game to have the ability to come back and win?
Well, I must admit that we were 44 points down, which is even worse at halftime, Jarrell. So we were when we came in, we expected to be lambasted by Barassi because you know he was wont to be fairly vocal when things weren't going well. But he was quite calm, and he basically said, "Look, we're playing into Collingwood's hands. We're playing the kick and mark style of game. We've got to play on more often and use handball." And you know, one thing he did say at three-quarter time that really impressed me, he said, win, lose or draw, I'm proud of you blokes. And we thought, lose or draw, you've got to be joking. And, you know, it was reverse psychology that worked incredibly well. And from then on, we went out and made every post a winner. But it was really when Hopkins came on after halftime and kicked those four second-half goals that really changed the course of the game.
It's interesting, Swan, you're just talking about what Barras said, because it doesn't matter what Carlton player you talk to that played in that day, they can all share that story, and it's a really consistent story. So clearly you're all listening that day, but you're always listening to Barras. He just had this ability to get you all in, and you'd sort of hang off every word.
Oh, absolutely. And he was a great coach, and he had the ability to get the best out of players, particularly in big games. And when you're dealing with personalities as diverse as Ragsy Gould at one end of the spectrum and perhaps Bruce Dill at the other, and to get players who are extroverts and introverts to work together as a team in the most important game is something really special. And that was what Barassi was able to do. He was an exciting coach to be around. He had a real aura of leadership and just excitement. And to go to training was enough, let alone to play in games when he was in charge. So I was very fortunate to have had my first start of my football career under Brassey.
Swan, it's such an honour for such a proud and historic football club to be now known as a legend. It's a bit of a cliche to ask this question, but what does Carlton mean to you? Why is it so special to you?
Well, it's been a massive part of my life, right from being a 19-year-old when I first came to Carlton. It's been a part of my life ever since. And it's just so important. You know, through football, as you guys would know, you've got a common interest with people right across the spectrum of society. And it just gives you an opportunity to talk and meet with people and to have a common talking point is just a terrific thing. And, look, Carlton has just been a wonderful club. I think it's got the best jumper in the league. It's got a proud history. And it's just to be part of that great club is, let alone legend, was just something special in my life.
If you're a footy fan, it kicks off tomorrow in the pre-season competition, the Amy Community Series, and the Blues are in action at Marvel Stadium against the Saints. And Mark Murphy, I'm sure he's excited about getting back in there. 16 years he's been doing this. He brings up game number 300, hopefully some stage this year in 2021. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Murph.
G'day, Haas.
Great to have you with us. Are you playing tomorrow night?
I think so. They're doing team selection at the moment, so hopefully I'll get a gig. But, I think most guys are putting their hand up at the moment, which is great.
You've been around for a long time now. I mentioned 300's just around the corner. A lot of pre-seasons. This is a very different one on the back of the COVID 2020 season. Did you enjoy the fact that you didn't have to train for months and months in preparation for a round one or a pre-season competition?
I certainly did. I think when you're going into year 16, I think the less time at pre-season is always a good result. But I think in general, it's better for everyone, really, unless you're probably a first to four-year player. I think it's important that guys have a good balance about sort of work and whether that's some sort of study as well they can do, because it's a pretty hard gig playing football all year round. We do get some time off at the end of each season, but I think guys now to have that sort of balance with work and study is really important for post-football, but I think it's also important for guys to work out what sort of training plans they have for themselves as well. And if they don't come back in good nick, then they'll fall behind anyway. So I think it was really good for our whole group, really.
How many years did you say Murph's played for?
This is number 16, I think.
16.
Yeah, 16, Whitey.
That's amazing. I remember you at draft camp. It seems like yesterday, going up to Canberra. Just with that last year playing this, you played all games, but through the shortened season, as in not as many games and the quarters not as long, is that good for you to have that going into this year, that your body might be a bit fresher?
Yeah, I think so. We did have like games within 4 or 5 days of each other, so that maybe counteracted that a little bit. But I was like, well, most guys are coming off each game still feeling like they had something in the tank. So it certainly was noticeable, the game being shorter. And I think it certainly did probably help me on the back end of my career that it was a year that was pretty interrupted. Shorter games, as you said. It was very different. I feel really fresh at the moment. We've all been back for, 7 or 8 weeks, really. But obviously the lead-up training pre-Christmas, everyone did it individually. But, mentally I feel really good, physically really fresh. So looking forward now to play against some opposition tomorrow night with, some crowd. And, the Melbourne people are obviously pretty excited about footy being back. So it's an awesome time in Melbourne.
And is that important to you? You mentioned about playing in front of crowds, and obviously you played in front of some crowds when you're playing predominantly in Queensland and in Perth and wherever else you played. But to get in front of the faithful again late in your career, how much does that give you a bit of a boost?
It's actually huge. I mean, you probably don't appreciate it when you play for quite a long time how important fans are and crowds are to football. And I certainly felt that last year's sort of almost motivation at times was almost lacking a bit because there was no real atmosphere at all. And I was at our season preview the other night just talking to some fans there about how excited they are to see football back. And I think even just in sport in general, like athletes rise to the occasion when there is atmosphere in the on the court or on the footy field. It makes athletes perform better, I think, as well. And they're certainly, fans are certainly crucial to sport everywhere around the world.
And just back page of The Age today, Blues, time to deliver. That's from Robert Walls, who thinks that it's time to deliver. Do you feel it's time? Do you feel that you've got the team and you've played in finals with Carlton before, so you know what's required to have a finals team? Do you think this is a team that's capable?
I certainly think we're capable. I think the way, I know everyone talks about this time of year, everyone's trying the house down, but I genuinely believe that our skills are as good as they've ever been. I think we've got enough experience. Now, I don't think we're a young side as such anymore. If you look through our best 22, or there'll probably be 26 guys that you're probably throwing there at the moment, it's a pretty decent side. I think we learned a lot of lessons last year about ourselves. We're in a lot of games, had those little blowouts within periods of games that cost us games. And people link that back to what Brisbane were like 2 or 3 years ago when they lost a lot of close games. And as long as we learn those lessons, I firmly believe that we're certainly on the right track, and I'm as positive as I've been in a long time about where we're at the moment. We just need to stay healthy, and that's the main thing for us at the moment. And I'm sure our fans are pretty excited about watching us live this year.
Fair bit happening in basketball at the moment. We spoke about the NBL Cup with Jeremy Lulliger, the commish, the CEO of the NBL, last week. Well, he's back on the line, not for that, but for another update on proceedings. There's plenty happening. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning to you, gents. Yeah, there's a lot happening at the minute.
My word, there is. We're loving the NBL Cup, just by the way. That's a great concept of working beautifully. The doubleheaders going gangbusters, and the crowds are coming back, which is awesome. But tomorrow, you're releasing at selected Hoyts Cinemas a documentary, a full-length documentary, charting the rise of LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton in the NBL as part of the Next Stars program. Tell us more, Jeremy.
Yeah, the film's called The Next Stars. It's our first feature film. I can tell you it's not something that was at the top of our to-do list 5, 6 years ago when we first took on this little journey of reprising the NBL. But what we were always very keen on was storytelling and helping people to understand why Australian basketball is unique, what role we can play in a global sporting industry. And I think the film goes a long way to doing that. It charts the paths of 4 different young men, not just RJ and LaMelo, but also Terry Armstrong and Gigi Luzzatto, our other 2 Next Stars from last season, and explores the fact that they all came from very different backgrounds to this sort of congruence for a short period of time, but a critical period of time in our league before they all set off on their next steps of their basketball journey to the NBA and elsewhere.
So when you're trying to put this all together on the storyboard and the whiteboard and get this across the line, you're obviously dealing with not just the athletes, but also teammates and coaches and clubs and the like. How much convincing of them did you have to do, or were they all in from the start as well?
Oh, look, it was a bit of a mixed bag. Trying to get cameras into locker rooms, those sorts of things, always proves to be a challenge. And no different to live broadcast in many respects, but I think people bought into it over the journey when they understood what it was that we were seeking to do. And probably worth noting that while the feature film focuses on the 4 Next Stars, there is a lot of other content that we gathered through the season that is going to be displayed to the public in a different format that goes into a lot more of the detail of what was an extraordinary year last year for so many different reasons. I think they all bought into it because of that reason.
Will you hope to get international audiences through this? Because obviously it's also a promotion of the program, of the Next Stars program for the NBL, which has gone gangbusters, clearly, with this group of players. Is it about trying to get the message about the NBL global as well?
Absolutely it is. So we have an international distributor and distribution agreement, and those conversations are taking place at the moment. But certainly it was produced with an international audience in mind. When you get along and see the film, you'll see there are some fantastic hero shots of different locations around Australia. And it's hopefully a real draw card, particularly, I guess, for a North American audience who are interested in the alternative path that these guys took on their route to the NBA and learning a little bit more about how we conduct ourselves down here in Australia.
So LaMelo Ball is obviously doing really well in the NBA, and Half was saying earlier today that he thinks he'll probably be Rookie of the Year. does that make it even more enticing for basketballers to come from America down to the NBL into the future, or has the work already been done because he got taken so high in the draft?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it certainly helps reinforce the validity of the Next Stars program and of the NBL. I agree with Harf. I think he's almost a shoo-in for Rookie of the Year. He's just won Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month for the second time, second or third. I think he's won it each month that he's been in the league so far anyway. And the fact that he didn't come over here and completely dominate the competition. He came over here and did what people were hoping and expecting him to do. While he performed incredibly for an 18-year-old in his rookie season, not like he came over and destroyed everyone in his path. And so what that demonstrates is that the league is at an incredible standard, but it's a perfect proving ground for those guys who are transitioning out of amateur basketball, out of high school, out of college, who are used to just dominating the competition and being the best on the court by a country mile, and instead answering the questions that NBA GMs and scouts have, which is whether or not they can compete against grown men and whether or not they can slot into a professional system. And you'll see there's a lot of content in there about that transition from amateur to professional. Mm. Not just, you know, people just think it has an impact on your paycheck, when in fact it has a massive impact on your lifestyle, on the people's expectations of you, the way in which you conduct yourself on and off the court. So what I think it's done is really prepare LaMelo to be part of a professional system and a professional team.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.